I hope you remember the seven books of Abhidhamma that we studied yesterday. And among them, there is one book called Puggalapanyati, description of the types of beings. So that book deals with what are called concepts, because that book deals with different individuals. Apart from that, I mean, and also from Kathavattu, the points of controversy, what is taught in Abhidhamma is mostly the four ultimate truths. And these four ultimate truths are taught in different ways. And now you might want to know how the four ultimate truths correspond to the four noble truths. Now, the four noble truths are the noble truth of suffering, the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, and the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Now, the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering, consists of mundane cittas, cittasikas, and rupa. So, among the four ultimate truths, the first one, part of the first one, second one, and the third one correspond to the noble truth of suffering. And the second noble truth, the noble truth of origin, is craving, which is a mental factor. Now, craving is among the cittasikas, 52 cittasikas, because craving is loba attachment. So, the second noble truth, the noble truth of the origin of suffering, is just one of the 52 cittasikas. And the third noble truth, the noble truth of cessation of suffering, is nibbana, which is the fourth ultimate truth. And the last one, the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Now this, the fourth noble truth, is often called the middle way or the eightfold path. Now, eightfold path means this path has eight members or eight constituents. And many of you may be familiar with these eight factors, right understanding, right thought, and so on. These eight factors are actually mental states or mental factors. So they are included in the cittasikas. So these eight cittasikas form the middle path or the fourth noble truth, which is the way or the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So all four noble truths are included in these four ultimate realities, but not just one-to-one. So the first noble truth consists of some cittasikas and rupa. And the second noble truth consists of one cittasika, which is craving or attachment. And the third noble truth consists of nibbana, the extinction of all suffering. And the fourth noble truth consists of the eight mental factors or eight cittasikas. After we understand the four ultimate truths that are taught in Abhidhamma Pitaka, we will now go to the detailed study of these four ultimate realities. The first of the four ultimate realities is consciousness, and so we will study the types of consciousness. So consciousness is something that arises in our minds. Now, by mind I mean consciousness and mental factors together. So consciousness is something that arises in our mind, and consciousness arises when there are conditions for it. And there are different types of consciousness or different kinds of consciousness. So first, the consciousness is divided with reference to the planes of existence. So first, you need to know the planes of existence. And these planes of existence are taught in the fifth chapter of this comprehensive manual. So if you want to know the 31 planes of existence, you go to this book, the fifth chapter. But you need not go into detail now. So there are 31 planes of existence. The lowest of them are the four that are called planes of misery or planes of suffering. So those that are born in these four planes of existence had a lot of suffering, like those born in hell and so on. So first there are four planes of existence, the lowest of them, and then above the four there is the plane of human beings. And above the human beings there are six planes of devas or celestial beings. And above these six planes of celestial beings are the 20 planes of existence called Brahma. We may call them higher celestial beings. So altogether there are 31 planes of existence. Again, the first four that are the planes of misery, and then human realm or human plane, and then six deva or celestial beings plane, and then 20 higher celestial beings. So if we add up all of them, we get 31 planes of existence. Now among them, the four lower planes, human plane, and the six deva planes or six celestial planes are collectively called sense sphere planes. So these 11 are called sense sphere planes. And then above them, out of 20 planes for Brahmas, we divide them into two. The Brahmas of they are called material plane and the immaterial plane. So material plane means that those who are reborn in those planes have both mind and body. Only one of them has body only and no mind. And then the last four are called immaterial planes because they do not have a physical body. They only have consciousness and jetasikas. So roughly we have three levels of planes. The lowest is called sense sphere plane, and then the second is material plane, and the third immaterial plane. So the immaterial plane and material plane beings are called Brahmas, and the others are devas and human beings and beings of four states of misery. Now, all of these beings in the 30 planes have consciousness. So they experience consciousness in different ways, and so there are different types of consciousness. And consciousness is divided with reference to these planes. Consciousness that frequently arises in the 11 sense sphere planes are called sense sphere consciousness. And the consciousness that frequently arises in the material plane are called the material sphere consciousness, and those that arise frequently in the immaterial planes are called immaterial plane consciousness or immaterial plane consciousness. So broadly speaking, there are three planes of consciousness, and then there is one more which is called a supramundane plane. And supramundane plane means it has no actual place, but just the some types of consciousness are called supramundane plane. The supramundane plane means the plane that transcends the lower three planes, or that transcends the five aggregates of clinging that are called the world. So the supramundane plane is something like out of the world, and the other three belong to the world. So broadly, the consciousness is divided into these four according to the planes where they arise frequently. The first group consists of, again, unwholesome consciousness, and then rootless consciousness, and so on. So we will study them in detail one by one. Now first, let us consider an illustration. Suppose there is a boy, and he goes to a fruit stall, and he sees, say, mangoes there. And he holds the view that there is no evil in stealing. It is all right to steal. And with happiness, he steals a mango. So when he steals a mango with happiness and with the view that there is no evil in stealing, there arises one type of consciousness in his mind. His consciousness, when he steals, there is lobha or attachment in his mind, because he wants to steal, he wants that mango, and so there is lobha or attachment or greed accompanying his consciousness. So at that moment when he steals a mango, there arises in his mind one type of consciousness. And that consciousness is accompanied by, let us say, greed. And since he steals with happiness, his consciousness is accompanied by happiness. And since he steals with the view that there is no evil, it is no evil in stealing, it is all right to steal, he has a wrong view, and spontaneously he steals it, not being prompted by anybody or any circumstances. So in that case, there arises in his mind one type of consciousness. Now you remember what type of consciousness that is. A consciousness accompanied by greed. So to be short, I use with pleasure, with wrong view, unprompted. So that the first type of consciousness there, with pleasure, with wrong view, unprompted, and it is accompanied by or rooted in attachment. We can know this consciousness in a boy who spontaneously steals an apple from a mango or an apple from a fruit stall, with the view that there is no evil in stealing, and he steals it with happiness. So in that case, this type of consciousness arises in his mind. So this is the first of the unwholesome consciousness. Now this is called unwholesome consciousness because it is morally unwholesome. And also, unwholesome consciousness brings painful results. In Pali, it is called akusala, unwholesome. Now, sometimes akusala is translated as unskillful. So, unskillful consciousness or unwholesome consciousness, and I prefer unwholesome to unskillful. Okay, now I will explain to you the meaning of the word kusala first. When you understand the word kusala, you understand the word akusala. Kusala means wholesome and akusala means unwholesome. Now, kusala is also translated as skillful. Now, it is correct that it is translated as skillful, but I'm not in favor of using skillful for kusala, because people can manipulate this, people can twist this. You can skillfully kill a man and then get away with it. You can skillfully steal an object. When you kill a human being, when you steal something, then it is no kusala. I think we should avoid using skillful for the word kusala. Although, basically, the word kusala means skillful. Sometimes the meaning of the words change with times. Originally, the word kusala comes from two components, kusa and la. Now, kusa means a kind of grass, a kind of grass whose blades are sharp. So with sharp blades on both edges, that grass is like a knife. I don't know whether there are grass like this in this country. So, that kind of grass, if you do not know how to handle that grass, you will cut your hand. So, if somebody says, this man can handle the kusa grass, that means this man is clever enough to handle the grass without cutting his hands. So, a man who can handle the kusa grass without cutting his hand is called a kusala. Later on, this name is extended to mean anybody who is skillful, in doing anything. So the original meaning of the word kusala is skillful. But it is explained that it also means to be healthy. So I like that meaning, healthy, for the word kusala. The opposite of the word kusala is akusala. So here, akusala we translate as unwholesome consciousness. So this first unwholesome consciousness arises when a boy spontaneously steals a mango or an apple without being prompted by anybody, and he has a wrong view that it is all right to steal, and he steals it with happiness. So the first type of consciousness is accompanied by pleasure, associated with wrong view, and unprompted. If he steals that mango, when he is prompted by somebody, when he is encouraged by somebody, and then he steals it, then at that moment there is the second type of consciousness arising in his mind, that is with pleasure, with wrong view, and prompted. So there are always these two kinds of consciousness, one unprompted and the other one prompted. So prompted and unprompted means urged by someone or urged by oneself or encouraged by someone or encouraged by oneself. Sometimes you have to encourage yourself to do something. So that is also called prompted. Sometimes you do the act spontaneously without even thinking about it. So that is called unprompted. The unwholesome consciousness arises sometimes unprompted and sometimes prompted. So we get the first two types of consciousness. The first one, that is with pleasure, with wrong view, and unprompted, and the second one, with pleasure, with wrong view, and prompted. If that boy does not have that wrong view, does not have the view that it is all right to steal, he knows that it is wrong to steal, but still he steals unprompted, also he steals heavily, then there arises in his mind the third type of consciousness, that is with pleasure, without wrong view, and unprompted. And if he is prompted, then another type of consciousness arises in his mind with pleasure, without wrong view, and prompted. So first we get four types of consciousness here that are accompanied by pleasure, and two with wrong view and two without wrong view, and two prompted and two unprompted. So first we get these four types of consciousness. To be easy to memorize, I use the keywords here. Now, if you want to know the full translation of these types of consciousness, please read this book, the Comprehensive Manual. And then there are the other four, which are accompanied by indifference. That is, he is neither happy nor angry. So with the neutral mind, he steals the apple or the mango, and with wrong view, without wrong view, unprompted and prompted. And so altogether, we get eight types of consciousness that are rooted in attachment. Rooted in attachment really means accompanied by or associated with attachment. And attachment here means just the desire to possess. So we get eight types of consciousness that are rooted in attachment. And then there are two types of consciousness rooted in ill will or anger. Now the example here is with hatred, one man murders another in a spontaneous fit of rage. So one person gets angry and then he just kills another person. So when he kills another person, he has anger or hate in his mind. Since he murders without being prompted by anybody on the spur of the moment, now his consciousness is said to be unprompted. So in this case, the first of the two consciousness rooted in ill will arises in his mind, that is with displeasure, and that means with hate or with hatred, I mean with anger, with ill will and unprompted. But if he murders a man with premeditation, then the consciousness that arises in him is with displeasure, with ill will, and prompted. So there are only two types of consciousness accompanied by ill will or anger or hate. But there are eight types of consciousness accompanied by attachment or lobha. I think we are fortunate that there are only two types of consciousness rooted in anger or ill will. If there were eight of them, we cannot imagine how miserable the world would be. Even these two can create a lot of cruelty or violence in the world. So there are two types of consciousness rooted in ill will. And then there are two more that are rooted in delusion. Now, delusion means ignorance. And later on, I will tell you the Pali words for them. So, delusion really means ignorance. Consciousness rooted in ignorance. There are two of them. And the first one is with indifference and with doubt. Now, sometimes people have doubt about the Buddha, about the Dhamma, about the Sangha, about the enlightenment of the Buddha, or about the practice and so on. So when a person, due to delusion, that means he is deluded, he is ignorant, and doubts the enlightenment of the Buddha or the efficacy of the Dhamma as a way to deliverance, then he has this type of consciousness in his mind, with indifference, with doubt. And here there is no difference between unprompted and prompted, so there is no such division here. Now this doubt is very damaging, especially when you practice meditation. Sometimes doubt arises when you are meditating whether this method is really good, whether it will really lead to the understanding the true nature of things and so on. Or sometimes people will doubt about the efficacy of this method, or doubt about the trustworthiness of the teacher and so on. So when such doubts arise, a meditator cannot go on meditating. So in this case, when he is practicing vipassana meditation, he just need to note the doubt. He just need to be aware of the doubt, and thus he eliminates the doubt. So that is the consciousness accompanied by doubt and with indifference. Since there is the doubt, his mind cannot be happy or cannot have ill will, so it is neutral. And the last one is with indifference and with restlessness. Now, a person is so distracted in mind that he cannot focus his mind on any object. Did you have such experience? I think you did. Everybody has such experience. Sometimes we practice meditation and our mind doesn't seem to be on the object. We don't seem to be able to concentrate on the object. Our mind is like not stuck to the object, but above the object, moving a little. So that is called restlessness of mind. So in Abhidhamma, restlessness means restlessness of mind. And restlessness of mind really means shaking or moving above the object. Our mind is not with the object. Now, we do not see the object clearly when there is restlessness in our mind. At that moment, this type of consciousness arises in our mind. And so, there are altogether two types of consciousness rooted in delusion. Now, the first eight, consciousness rooted in attachment. In Pali, they are called Lobha Mula. You have the other sheets. Now, you may look at the Pali sheets also. So, Lobha Mula. Now, Mula means root, and Lobha means Lobha or attachment. So, Lobha Mula means having Lobha as root. And there are eight of them. And the second group is called Dosa Mula. So Dosa means ill will or hate or anger. So rooted in hate, rooted in ill will, or rooted in anger. They are called Dosa Mula, two. And then the third group is called Moha Mula. So Moha means delusion or ignorance. And the consciousness rooted in Moha is called Moha Mula. So altogether there are 12 types of consciousness, and these 12 types of consciousness are called unwholesome consciousness. You may also call it unskillful, but I think we better call it unwholesome. So unwholesome types of consciousness. Whatever bad karma we do with one of these types of consciousness. Sometimes we are attached to something, sometimes we may take something that is not given to us, then there is this Lobha or the Lobha Mula consciousness in our minds and so on. Sometimes we get angry, and then there is the one of the two types of consciousness arising in our minds. Now, in Abhidhamma, the anger or hate includes fear. So when we are afraid of something, when we fear something, then one of these two types of consciousness rooted in ill will arises in our minds. So when we are afraid of something, we have Dosa Mula consciousness. Or when we fear something, we have Dosa Mula consciousness. So the Dosa can cover many shades of many types of emotions. Sadness, depression, dissatisfaction, anger, hate, and fear all come under the head of ill will. So when we are afraid of something, we have one of these two types of consciousness. Now, prompted and unprompted. You may read the note at the bottom of the page. The Pali word Sankhara is used here in the sense specific to Abhidhamma, to mean prompting, instigation, inducement, or the application of an expedient. This prompting may be induced by others, or it may originate within oneself. The means employed may be bodily, verbal, or purely mental. That consciousness which arises spontaneously without prompting or inducement by expedient means is called unprompted. That consciousness which arises with prompting or inducement by expedient means is called prompted. So this is from the Comprehensive Manual of Abhidhamma. So prompting can be one's own, or it may come from outside, other persons. Sometimes when we want to do something, we have to encourage ourselves. Sometimes we do it spontaneously. And so when we do it spontaneously, the consciousness that arises in our mind is called unprompted. And When we do with prompting, then it is called prompted. Now, the Pali word for these words, prompted and unprompted, are asankharika and sasankharika. Now, you may notice that there is the word sankhara there in the word asankharika and sasankharika. Now, the word sankhara in Pali is a difficult word to understand, and also it cannot be translated by just one English word. So you have to find out what it means to get the correct translation of the word. For example, when we say all sankharas are impermanent, we mean those that are conditioned. But in the formula of the dependent origination, the first sentence says, because there is ignorance as a condition, there are sankharas. Now, in that sentence, the word sankhara cannot be translated as conditioned things or conditioned phenomena. There, sankhara is translated as formations or karma formations. The word sankhara has at least two meanings. One is active and the other is passive. So sankhara means something that makes or that produces. And also sankhara means something that is made or that is produced. So we need to understand what meaning is appropriate in a given context. That is why we cannot translate this word with just, say, mental formations or just conditioned phenomena. So we have to depend on the context. But here, in this particular context, the word sankhara means effort. So that is why it is very difficult to get a correct translation when you translate from Pali into English or any other language. So here, prompted and unprompted are the translations of the Pali words sasankharika and asankharika, and here sankhara means effort. But in other places, sankhara may mean all conditioned phenomena or all karma formation. That means all that produce results. So now we have the 12 unwholesome types of consciousness. Do you bring the small cards with you today? That is for memorization of the consciousness. So please look at the first column, represents the 12 unwholesome types of consciousness. And in order to differentiate those that are accompanied by pleasure from those that are accompanied by indifference, we use colors. So red colors mean accompanied by pleasure, and blue color means accompanied by indifference. So this card will help you to memorize the different types of consciousness. In a different sheet, you may write down the names of those, but later you may not need the descriptions, but just look at this chart and then you know this is pleasure with wrong view unprompted, with pleasure with wrong view prompted, and so on. The first column represents the 12 unwholesome types of consciousness. The first eight are those accompanied by or rooted in attachment. And then the two green color, the two are accompanied by ill will or displeasure, and the last two, the blue ones, accompanied by indifference. Indifference means neutral feeling, neither pleasure nor displeasure, neutral feeling. So we study these 12 looking at these dots. So the first eight are accompanied by attachment, and the two green dots accompanied by hate or anger, and the last two accompanied by delusion or moha. And we can exercise with this chart. So how many are accompanied by pleasure? Out of these 12, how many are accompanied by pleasure? Number 1, 2, 3, 4. Now how many are accompanied by indifference or neutral feeling? 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, there are no numbers. 5, 6, 7, 8, and 11, and 12. And how many are accompanied by displeasure or dosa? The two green dots. So now we know that out of 12 unwholesome types of consciousness, 4 are accompanied by pleasure and 6 accompanied by indifferent feeling or neutral feeling, and the 2 accompanied by ill will or anger. So you keep this card with you, put it in your pocket, and then you take it out at odd moments and look at it and memorize it. So if you do this, you will get the whole card very easily. So once you are familiar with it, you will know the value of this card, because it is like a map. So wherever you go, you should read a map before going. So when you know the map, then when you reach the place, say you know where to go or where you are and so on. So in the same way, it is important that you remember this, because in the next chapters, they will be referred to again and again. So it is important that you are familiar with this before you go to the next chapter and so on. And if you are familiar with this, then you will find joy in studying and understanding. So please give some time to this card and then memorize this. So, okay, now we have 12 unwholesome types of consciousness, and I think we know what type of consciousness is arising in our mind when we do something bad. So when we get angry with somebody, then what type of consciousness will be in our mind? One of the two green ones. Suppose after the class you drive and somebody cut in front of you and you are angry, right? So in that case, one of these two. And I think your anger will be unprompted. So it may be the first type of consciousness. And if you have doubt about the teachings or doubt about the Buddha, then you know that the consciousness accompanied by delusion has arisen in your mind, number 11. So something like that. Then you want something. And when you want something, then one of the eight may be in your mind. So this is a practical benefit we get from understanding Abhidhamma, because now you know that the unwholesome consciousness is described as morally unwholesome or morally unhealthy, and it is productive of painful results. Now, if we do not want to get painful results, then we must avoid having these types of consciousness. We may not be able to avoid altogether, because only when we become Buddhas and Arahants will we be able to avoid all of them. But we can avoid as much as we can, and in proportion as we can avoid these types of consciousness, so we will have less painful results in the future. So if we hate pain, or if we want to avoid painful results in the future, try to prevent these types of consciousness from arising in our minds. And yesterday I told you about the teaching of the Buddha that not to do any evil. Now you know what evil is. Now, whenever one of these types of consciousness arises in our mind, that means there is evil in our mind. So when we know that it is evil, then we will get rid of it as soon as we can, so that we do not acquire much unwholesome or bad karma. So when we know that something is harmful, then we can avoid it. If we do not know something is harmful, we will be doing it. So this is the practical benefit we get from the knowledge of Abhidhamma. Now, there are some sheets saying not all craving is bad. So, not all craving is bad. I'm not encouraging you to have craving, but I want you to understand that some craving is not bad for us. So, here, craving is craving for enlightenment. We want to get enlightenment, so we are attached to enlightenment. That craving is good or bad. Now, the commentary says that based on the present craving, that is, desire for becoming an arahant, he gives up previous craving that was the root cause of one's involvement in the cycle of rebirth. Now, depending on one craving, you try to give up another craving. Because you want to attain enlightenment, you try to get rid of attachment, or you try to get rid of craving. So that kind of craving for enlightenment, desire to become enlightenment, is here said that, what does the commentary say? Now it may be asked whether such present craving for arahantship is wholesome or unwholesome. It is wholesome or unwholesome to crave for enlightenment. Now, we want to get enlightenment. That desire, is it wholesome or unwholesome? Abhidhamma look at faces. In Burmese, we call look at faces. That means Abhidhamma does not exercise partiality. So, it must be impartial when we come to Abhidhamma. So, that craving, is that wholesome or unwholesome? It is unwholesome. Then, the commentary says here, should it be pursued or not, that kind of craving? It should be pursued. So, it is all right to have such craving. Does it drag one into rebirth or not? That means now the unwholesome karma gives painful results. But this karma will not drag you into rebirth. That means it is not too bad. So it does not drag one into rebirth. such permissible craving is abandoned when its object is attained. Now, we crave for enlightenment, and when we become enlightened, then we are able to discard or abandon the craving. So, we should have some kind of craving for enlightenment. We should have some kind of craving to get results when we practice meditation. Only when we have this expectation will we practice. If we do not expect anything out of the practice of meditation, we will not practice at all. Therefore, expecting for results of the practice of meditation is pursuable, as the commentary says here. But what is important when you practice meditation is to leave them alone. That means it is good to have expectation before you practice meditation. But when you are right in the practice, when you are sitting down and practicing, they will become obstacles. So at that time, you cannot afford to have these kinds of expectations. But they may come up, though they will come up quite often to you. And when they come up, you just be mindful of them or make mental notes of them. So that is advice for practice of meditation. So although lobha or craving is an unwholesome mental state, a craving for arahantship, craving to become an arahant, craving to gain enlightenment, is a pursuable craving, and so it is not so bad. Now, that is one thing. And another thing is, another sheet. What is the greater evil? Once King Milinda asked Reverend Venerable Nagasena. Now, he asked, revered Nagasena, for whom is the greater demerit? He who does an evil deed knowingly, or he who does an evil deed unknowingly? So which would be greater demerit, greater akusala, greater unwholesome act? When he does an evil deed unknowingly, or he does it knowingly? The answer is, his is the greater demerit, sire, who does an evil deed unknowingly. Now, it is the opposite of what we think, right? Because we can forgive people who say, oh, because I don't know I did this, please forgive me. Then we can forgive him readily. But here, the Venerable Nagasena is saying, he who does an evil deed unknowingly, then gets greater demerit. Milinda was not satisfied with just this answer, so he said, well then, Pandey, do we doubly punish the royal son of ours or the chief minister who does an evil deed unknowingly? Then the Venerable Nagasena said, what do you think about this? If one man should unknowingly take hold of a red-hot ball of iron, a glow, a flame, a blaze, and another should take hold of it knowingly, which would be the more severely burned? It's a very apt question, right? So you know that it will burn your hand, but you pick it up. You don't know that it will burn your hand and you pick it up. So if you pick up without knowing it, then you will take hold of it firmly, and so you will be burnt more. So that is what the Venerable Nagasena was saying here. So King Milinda said, he who took hold of it unknowingly would be the more severely burned. Then Venerable Nagasena said, "Even so, sir, the greater demerit is his who does an evil deed unknowingly." And Melinda said, "You are dexterous, Reverend Nagasena." So, according to this answer given by the Venerable Nagasena, and doing demerit unknowingly will bring us more demerit or bring us more painful results. Because when we know that it is unwholesome, it brings painful results, then we will be careful when doing it. But if we don't know it, then we will do it with might and main, so that we will get the painful results of it in the future. So this is the answer given by the Venerable Nagasena, and so we should keep it in mind, and whatever the situation is, we should try to avoid doing evil, having the akusala chetas as much as possible. Now we know and these 12 akusala chetas, we will be able to avoid them in our daily activities and in our dealing with people and so on. And so this is one great advantage we have when we understand Abhidhamma. So I want you to look at the chart again and memorize it. Okay, the first one, with pleasure, with wrong view, unprompted. The second one, with pleasure, with wrong view, prompted. The third one, with pleasure, without wrong view, unprompted. The fourth one, with pleasure, without wrong view, prompted. The fifth, with indifference, with wrong view, unprompted. The sixth, with indifference, with wrong view, prompted. Seventh, with indifference, without wrong view, unprompted. And eighth, with indifference, without wrong view, prompted. So these eight are accompanied by or rooted in lobha or attachment. And then the next two, the first one, with displeasure, with ill will, unprompted. And then second one, with displeasure, with ill will, prompted. So these are the two that are accompanied by ill will or dosa. And the last two, the first one, with indifference, with doubt. And the second one, with indifference and with restlessness. Here, the feeling is indifference, and there can be no pleasure or displeasure, because when there is delusion, mind is dull. So when mind is dull, it cannot experience the object post or fully, and so the feeling is only indifference or neutral. So now we know that there are 12 types of consciousness that are unwholesome. And unwholesome means morally unhealthy and also productive of painful results. So when we know this, then we will try to avoid, or we will try to prevent these types of consciousness from arising in our minds as much as possible. And we will be able to get rid of them altogether when we reach arahantship. Okay. So today we come to the end of the unwholesome consciousness, and we will continue our study of Chaitas tomorrow.
Any questions?
Very venerable sir, I have a question on the which is the greater evil, which you mentioned that the person who do the demerit unknowingly actually has a greater demerit. I just want to find out, is it because of the wrong will element that's present when he do it unknowingly?
It can be wrong view. Yeah, because unknowingly means he is not aware that it will bring painful results to him. So it is a kind of a wrong view.
Anyone?
Venerable sir, suppose someone were to kill a small creature by stepping on it knowingly, and someone who unknowingly steps on the creature and kills it, who has the greater demerit?
That depends on step on it intentionally or unintentionally. Sometimes he doesn't know that he's stepping on an insect. So in that case, there is no unwholesome deed or demerit for him. But if he intentionally step on the insect and kills it, I think that will be a great demerit for him. Because here, in the other case, he has no intention to kill. He stepped on it accidentally. So I think you know the story of the monk Chakubala during the time of the Buddha. He was an arahant and he was blind. And then he practiced meditation, walking up and down, and he stepped on many insects and killed them, right? So, but when it was reported to the Buddha, Buddha said, my son was innocent because he did not see these insects. So if he steps on the insects unintentionally, if he does not know that there are insects and step on them, then that he is free from akusala. But there will be akusala only when he steps on them intentionally. But if he intentionally steps on the insect and if he knows that it is akusala, then it may be for him, it may be a little less akusala than if he step on it with knowing.
Venerable sir, one of them referred to the cheetahs. You define cheetah as pure awareness of an object. So what is the definition of an object? For example, is sound an object?
Yes.
And the second question is, awareness, does it depend on senses, our five senses?
Now first, everything is the object. Now, this glass is an object, and this bag is the object, and also the mind is also object of another mind. We are aware of our mind, or we are aware of the mind of others, and so the object means anything that we can experience, that we can see, that we can hear, and so on. So they are all called objects. Next one.
So does consciousness means something that is experienced by the senses, the five senses, like the eye and the ear?
Yes, consciousness is experienced through the not five senses. In Buddhism, there are six senses. The mind is also called a sense in Buddhism. They are called doors. So you will study the doors in the third chapter of this book. So consciousness is something that arises in one of or through one of these senses.
Thank you. If you have no more questions, shall we
call it a day. Please rise.